You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Game Play. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. And speaking of betting, let's start here for a quick second in a game you probably didn't watch. The Phoenix Suns barely beat Utah. In a game without Donovan Mitchell, without Rudy Gobert, it should not have been that difficult for the Phoenix Suns to win. But they did. They held on late. They beat Utah 115-109. Suns have seven wins in a row, 10 of their last 11. Some guy from Utah named Daniel House Jr. played 43 minutes. This guy's career points per game is under 9. And I bring this up not because I want to do hot Phoenix Suns talk with you, but last week on this show, if you like to dabble in futures with MVP voting in the NBA, which to me is always a fun topic because it's not just about betting, but it's about, let's take the temperature of where are we in the NBA season. Stars in the NBA have so much more control over wins and losses than any other sport, but you already know that. So about a week ago, not even, Chris Paul, the odds of him winning the MVP were like plus 30,000. Today, they're plus 6,000. That is a hell of a drop from 30,000 to 6. And in the game last night, season high, 27 points. Points per game still matter. 9 rebounds, 14 assists. And 15 of those points were in the fourth quarter. And even though there was no stars for Utah, Phoenix versus Utah, that game's going to get a little more attention. So a bet that my producer Austin and I liked a lot was, why not put down a couple bucks on Chris Paul from plus 30,000 to plus 6,000. That's pretty crazy.
Oh, I like that even more now. It's that's really interesting to see how the market changed, because you've seen John Morant go from about plus 2,000 to now plus 14,000. But they dropped Chris Paul, and I find that fascinating. Maybe we
No, the other way. They made it better.
But, I mean, they made him less of a favorite, right? Like, he is less likely odds-on to win MVP. So you're getting more value now if you bet on him. So
No. Okay, wait. We got to do some producing here. You said before we went on air, he was at plus 30,000. Those odds have gone down to plus 6,000.
Yeah, I think we miscommunicated there, Matt.
Yes, it's okay. But you said, and maybe we can track this, but Chris Paul is now at plus 6,000. And there is still about 13, 14 people in front. We can figure out our math and our timeline where it went wrong. But the main point here is that Chris Paul, his chances of winning the MVP just keep getting better and better. And it was, so it was 3,300 last week. And now it's plus 6,000. What the hell is going on? Now my brain is broke.
Yeah,
Austin,
that's why I was confused.
What is going
Matt?
On?
That's why now, I was confused. I think it's because you're seeing bets placed on people like Joel Embiid, Ja Morant. So Vegas casinos have even less of a commitment to Chris Paul. So you're jacking up the odds, trying to get more people to bet on him. Because you're also seeing on that same at PointBet USA, Luka Doncic is plus 5,000. And the Mavs are the best team in the Western Conference right now. So I think that's what we're seeing a little bit there. But
right.
I'm doubling down on the Chris Paul bet.
I mean, again, it's just put down 20 bucks on it. You know, and with Dallas, it's a lot of Luka, but it's also that defense. That's been an incredible defense as of late. And with Luka, you know, the advantage Luka gets here is because he showed up out of shape and was bad the first month. People forget it. Now they're like, oh, wow, look at Luka. He's gone from averaging 23 to 29 a game. It's like, well, yeah, that's because he wasn't in shape. You know, so in some way that might help him. And we do have Dallas Golden State. Golden State's favored by 3.5. That seems high. Dallas in Golden State, they're 3-0 there in the new arena, but they're winning by 20, by 27, by 30. Luka's averaging 30 points per game in the three games at wherever the hell it is Golden State plays now, the Chase Center. It's impossible to keep up with the names of arenas.
RIP so, Oracle.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I'll just say right now, we'll get into it later. I think my favorite prop bet of the night is James Harden overs. Brooklyn's at home. So that means goodbye, Kyrie. Go to wherever you have to be, but you can't be in the stadium because of the rules. You can't play home games due to New York City's vaccine mandate. They're taking on the Lakers. Lakers have a horrible defense. Now, Harden's coming off his worst game of the season, 13 points, in a loss to Minnesota on Sunday. But last time they met, Harden had 36 against the Lakers. I'll go over the numbers in a little bit, but I like the over for points, rebounds, and assists. I love James Harden. The other one, though, is do we know Anthony Davis? I think he's expected that he should play, but I don't think we have a confirmation whether or not he will play.
No confirmation on whether he is playing. The rumor last night was that he is going to suit up tonight. It is a national television game for TNT, so I do think we'll see him.
That's right. Oh, my God. Anthony Davis is going to want to stick it to TNT.
That's what I'm thinking, too, with the whole panel and everything. Absolutely.
Yes. So in this game, if Anthony Davis plays, I'm going to take the under for points for LeBron, which is at 29.5. But I'll take the over for assists at 6.5. LeBron's one of the smartest in the league. I mean, to me, the game script is LeBron will still get his. He'll get like 25, 27 points. But it's going to be feeding Anthony Davis. Get Anthony Davis going.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I'm taking the Russell Westbrook unders for the rest of the season as well.
that's a pretty good bet, especially if you – I don't know where you could find this, but if you could just do player props per quarter, I will take the under for Russell Westbrook fourth quarter points.
But over on shot attempts.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Oh, my God, that'd be funny. I feel that Vegas would take that off the board. All right. I wanted to start with some heavy betting talk because my opening thought, is not exactly tied in to the world of sports betting, but it is one of the biggest topics today. Let's hit my opening thought.
Time now for Matt's opening thought.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
And here we go.
I mean, it's really nothing more than a self-absorbed monologue, a chance for Matt to rant about something and pretend he's a serious radio personality instead of a gas bag. Let's face it, he stole this idea from Dennis Miller.
No, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Today is one of the most important days for both classic and cliche sports debates. It's baseball Hall of Fame Announcement Day. This is the day where the Baseball Writers Association of America will let us know who is getting into the Hall of Fame. It is that special time of year that lets us yell and scream about who did get in and, more importantly, who didn't. And there's no group of voters that gets sports fans as upset as baseball Hall of Fame voters. Ironically, you could say they're the Barry Bonds of pissing off baseball fans. Remember last year when no one was inducted into the Hall of Fame? The writers looked at Schilling and Bonds and Clemens like, no. Way to read the room there, voters. We're going through COVID. Any sort of real sports news and celebration would have been great, but nope. The writers took their ball and they went home. My message to all the voters, do the right thing. Put the heroes and the villains in Cooperstown. The great thing about the baseball version of the Hall of Fame is it's discerning. This is not basketball where everyone gets in. Mitch Richmond, really? Huh? You got to earn it. But damn, your club is harder to get into than a late 1990s nightclub when the bouncers are like, yeah, I'm not letting you in. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, 10 dudes stinking of Red Bull and Jager bombs, they got a better chance of bouncers letting them in a nightclub than the greatest hitter of our generation does of getting 75% of the vote. So first up, let's go with the hero, David Ortiz. 541 home runs, 22nd in RBI, hitting .286. No DH was better at their job than he was. Super clutch during the World Series, 10-time All-Star, MVP of the 2013 World Series. The equivalent of his career in any other sport, first ballot Hall of Famer, get it done. As for steroids, yep, his name was part of that New York Times report that he failed a 2003 survey testing for performance-enhancing drugs. But Ortiz never failed from 2004 to the end of his career, so maybe he escapes the steroid cloud. He gets to go in as a hero. Now let's get to the villains. Hey, listen, I'm not subscribing to the Curt Schilling YouTube channel. I'm not liking any of his posts. But the man's a Hall of Famer. At the biggest stage, often against stacked Yankees lineups, Schilling dominated. An ERA of 2.23 in 133 career postseason innings that includes the World Series, which he won three. It's a no-brainer. Next is Roger Clemens, and yep, his days in Toronto are as fishy as day-old shrimp cocktail when he won back-to-back Cy Young here with the Jays. But even before his arrival, Clemens already logged over 2,700 innings, three Cy Youngs, one of the most dominant pitchers in the American League. He gets in. Finally, we get to the big bloated face of the steroid era, Barry Bonds. You know what? Fine. Let's ignore the record-setting 73 home runs he hit in 2001. Fine. From his first year in 86 to 98, when the steroid era really started to become a thing, he had already won three MVPs. He's the only player with 400-plus home runs, 400-plus steals, back when stealing a base was prized and his face looked skinny. Listen, I could rattle off all his other statistics, but it'll get boring. Let's just say this. He kind of finished every year in the top five of everything. Then there was his last year. At the age of 42, he had a better on-base percentage than any player in baseball this year or last year. At the age of 42, his on-base would have ranked number one this year, would have ranked number one last year. It's crazy. We can get in the conversation about Colin Kaepernick getting blackballed, but Barry Bonds like, hold my beer for a second. So come on, baseball writers. Give us something interesting to talk about. Give us something to celebrate. Much better than all the other baseball-related news. That's just more fighting between the union and the owners. We've gone over this every year. The Hall of Fame, it's a museum. It's there to record history. You can't have a Hall of Fame without Bonds, Clemens, and Schilling and the stories they tell, both the good and the bad. Schilling's one of the best postseason pitchers I've ever seen. Greg Maddux is the only pitcher I would put over Clemens that I watched. And Bonds is the best hitter I've seen. Maybe eventually Trout takes over, but still Barry Bonds. They were the players you would pay to watch. They were the players that made you the most nervous when they faced your team. They are the players whose busts I would first go see when visiting Cooperstown. They belong in the hall, warts and all. Actually, I didn't mean for that last line to rhyme. God damn it, well, it did. And that's it. That's my opening thought.
I'm finished.
I mean, it's a classic day, Austin. It's a classic day where we could all just yell and scream.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, but to present the other side, you mentioned Greg Maddux there. I think of people like Kenny Griffey Jr. And the argument for letting Bonds, Clemens in, McGuire, Sosa even, is everyone was cheating. But no, like, not everyone was. We have people like Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, those Braves teams in the 90s, right? Where there is no Chipper Jones, there is no allegations of performance PED use.
Yep.
So why do these guys then get an exception even though they were not, they're playing on the same field as people not doing PED? So it just sounds like you just don't care anymore that they cheated when I don't know. They shouldn't matter that they cheated.
We care, Austin, but here's the difference. It's all about punishment, pound of flesh, shaming. Well, these guys have to wait till the very end. They're not first ballot Hall of Famers. They're not getting close to 100% of the vote. So there has been punishment.
None of the players they played against either, though, are getting that, right? Like Chipper Jones wasn't a first ballot. Chipper Jones isn't eligible yet, but Maddux wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No, he didn't get 100% of the vote, but he went in. He got it. Wait, did he not get in his first year? Oh, my God, he didn't, did he?
Oh, he did. That's the Baseball Hall of Fame, though, too, right? It's like one player. Mariano Rivera and Babe Ruth are the only ones to get on the first ballot. That's just the way it goes. But that's not the point here. The point here is I don't know why we just discount why these guys cheated, even though it is historical and it is part of the game, and the Hall of Fame should be a reflection of the game's history. Completely agree with all that. But you can't then just maybe make a exhibit for them. Don't give them a bust. Don't give them a statue. Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame for his Pittsburgh career. I completely agree with that. And Roger Clemens could be in the Hall of Fame for his Red Sox career, much less what he did in New York and Houston and the Yankees after. So I don't know, Matt. I'm stuck between two ways on that. The only one I do know for sure, let Pete Rose in.
Oh, I think Pete Rose should go in. I mean, on this show, we definitely embrace him. Okay, so I got to go back to Maddux. No player has ever been elected. This was before Mariano. Had ever been elected unanimously into the Hall of Fame, and Maddux wasn't. So he got in the first year he was eligible, but he didn't get the unanimous vote. Okay, sorry. That was throwing me for a second. And no, everything you're saying is the legitimate other side to this conversation. But to me, in the end, they should be in. They should be in. Their accomplishments before the PED scandal became a big thing would have got them in. Their accomplishments at the end of their career, especially someone like Barry Bonds, they were the best at what they did. Also, everyone had their version of your little cheating pills. Baseball in the 80s and 90s
and amphetamines
and all these things in the locker room, these little pick-me-ups.
Well, okay, so, I don't disagree with your shilling Bonds. Can I ask you one, though, and I want to know what you think. Canseco, statistically, absolutely, but we all know the story. See, that's where the hesitation comes in. So it's like, I don't see why Canseco is painted with this brush and the other guys aren't necessarily, but...
Well, listen, the pause is only because it's the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, you're right. Statistically, he definitely deserves to be in.
My God. Like, okay, put it this way. You know, there's like the Mendoza line in baseball? The Basketball Hall of Fame Mendoza line to me, I just use Mitch Richmond.
Yeah, and Antoine Jameson would work too.
Antoine Jameson's not in the Hall of Fame, is he?
Yeah, he will be. I think he will be. 20,000 points. He'll be there within the next 2 years.
Like, Curt Schilling. We'll say Curt Schilling is the worst of those three guys in terms of accomplishment between Clemens, Bonds, and Curt Schilling. Curt Schilling would be third in that list. That's fine. Curt Schilling's career in baseball, I think we can agree, is far better than Mitch Richmond's career was in the NBA.
Yeah, Curt Schilling's career on the Phillies was much better than Mitch Richmond's career in the NBA. But yeah, it is the Baseball Hall of Fame. But that's what also makes it so special. So I'm kind of two minds on the whole debate about it.
Yeah, no, I know. I get it. All right, on the other side, I want to, there's a piece of sound I want to play. I want to throw out a question to you. I say the name Matt Stafford. Don't answer it on this side. Can you think of anyone who is enjoying themselves more now in the NFL playoffs? Let's get into that on the other side. I'm Matthew Kaz. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay, the Tuesday Top 5. In honor of the Buffalo Bills and that crushing loss to the Kansas City Chiefs over the weekend, we want to know, What is your top five, and you don't have to give all five, but you can if you want, top five worst losses as a sports fan. Now, we're going to put a caveat here. You can only have one Toronto Maple Leafs memory. So text me at 10:50:50. Which were the losses that hurt you as a fan the most? I like this one from Ronnie McSinner. My parlay every night.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Yeah, that is a good one. And we're getting a lot of good stuff coming in here from the listeners. So tweet me at mcause56, and you can text us at 10:50:50 as well. Oh, someone right in Nagano. Oh, that one was really hard.
That's the one where they didn't put Gretzky in the shootout, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Mark Crawford, jeez.
Yeah, that one, oof. That one hurt. Oh, God. And, like, I'm going to try to respond. There are so many that are coming in already. So text us at 10:50:50. We go from depression to joy. Give me the sound of Matt Stafford talking about the joy it felt stealing somebody's soul.
In my mind, I live for those kind of moments. You know, I would have loved to have been taking a knee up three scores, but it's a whole lot more fun when you got to make a play like that to win the game and just steal somebody's soul. You know, that's what it feels like sometimes, where they're sitting there going, man, we just had this great comeback, and you get to reach in there and take it from them. That's a whole lot of fun.
He did that against Brady. And my question, I threw it before, who's enjoying themselves more than Matthew Stafford in his playoffs? Because Patrick Mahomes, been there. This is the fourth time he's hosting a AFC championship game. Joe Burrow is too young to know what failure really feels like. This is a guy that all he did was win in college and actually had a productive rookie season until he got injured. Jimmy Garoppolo has done a whole lot of winning in his career, despite his productivity not matching to all those playoff W's. But I can you think of anyone, Austin, that is having more fun right now than Matthew Stafford?
See, my answer would have been Jimmy G because he's doing the classic free rider thing where he's putting in the least amount of work possible and getting the best grades. But no, I think with Matthew Stafford, with his career and everything he saw in it, that this is just an incredible experience for him. And you saw after that Cooper Kupp completion, he got the guys down to the line, spiked the ball right away.
Yes.
He's in the moment. He's aware. He's ready to go. And I'm happy for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. And that's why.
He was a loyal guy to Detroit. And, and you know, they kind of they mutually parted ways. And you so rarely see that in sports. And he's got what he wanted. Detroit got what they wanted out of it. So it's nice to see.
Yeah. He asked for a trade the way, like, Roy Halladay would have asked for a trade with the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Which is like, listen, I've been here for ages. I've signed contracts. I've done what I can. And it's just not working out. Okay, let's go to Tom Brady. Let's stick with the quarterbacks for a second here.
Speaking of stealing a soul.
Yeah, he stole many souls. In fact, actually, no, I don't want to start with Tom Brady. I want to start with this clip of Dominique Foxworth, former quarterback. He's one of the best when it comes to talking football with ESPN. And he says that there's one word that Tom Brady has used in some of these post in some of the post-loss comments that really sticks out. Have a listen to what Dominique Foxworth had to say.
Like, this feels like a funeral. Like, he's given us more than we deserve. Yeah, like, we should celebrate that. And he used one word that in there that got my attention. I would have said, he's coming back. He's coming back. He's coming back. He said, satisfied.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've never heard that word come out of this man's mouth. The guy with 7 Super Bowl rings, a bunch of MVPs, and everything you could ever want as a quarterback or as a player. He's never, ever seemed satisfied or said the word satisfied. He said, and he didn't say it about his whole life or his whole career, but he did say, I was satisfied with how this season went. That word just, I mean, that concept doesn't seem like something that's.
Satisfied. That is a really good analysis there from Dominique Foxworth. Because Tom Brady never says he's satisfied. Hey, Tom, which is your favorite Super Bowl win? The next one. It's like, all right, we get it, you hero. But for him to throw around the word satisfied, I got to tell you, like, I'm going to look around. Are there places you can place a bet if Brady's going to come back or not? Because I say he's not. We got time for one Brady clip. The Q&A. Taking time. He's going to take some time to decompress.
Tom, you were asked right after the game, what's next? You said you're going to take some time. When will you begin that process, and how will that go with your review?
Well, I think the point is there's no really rush for me to figure out what's next. You know, I'll know when I know. And I think for all of us, you know, we can all decompress a bit. It's been 6 straight months of football every day consumed by, you know, day in and day out football. And I think now it's just some time to spend some time with my family and spend some time with, you know, my kids. As I've gotten older, I think the best part is football is extremely important in my life, and it means a lot to me. And I care a lot about what we're trying to accomplish as a team. And I care a lot about my teammates. And the biggest difference now that I'm older is I have kids now too, you know, and I care about them a lot as well. You know, they've been my biggest supporters. My wife is my biggest supporter. It pains her to see me get hit out there. And, you know, she deserves what she needs from me as a husband. My kids deserve what they need from me as a dad. You know, I'm going to spend some time with them and give them what they need, because they've really been giving me what I need the last 6 months to do what I love to do. And it's what relationships are all about. It's not always what I want. It's what we want as a family.
He gone. On the other side, Nadal +270 to win the men's single title. Would you take that bet? Felix Auger-Aliassime is +530 to beat Daniel Medvedev. We talk about that and Shapovalov and his meltdown and near victory next with Mark Rowe. It's all things Aussie Open right here on Gameplay.
Hey, can I get in on that?
On TSN 1050.
You broke his thumbs.
It was an accident.
Is that what you call it when somebody doesn't pay up?
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. And I imagine he just woke up because he's covering the Aussie Open, where the matches start late or they start early, but they never start on time if you live in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. It is a TSN reporter and man who anchor covering all things tennis, Olympics, and a ton in between. It is Mark Rowe. Good afternoon, Mark. Good morning, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, good afternoon, good morning. I'm not sure. You know, I did think about maybe just delaying the hello back to you.
Yeah,
you think that maybe I fell asleep here on the wheel, but no, everything's good, my man. How are you?
Good. I am doing very well, and I want to start with this ridiculous question. Nadal Nadal is plus 270 to win the men's single title, and the main reason I'm not going to bet on him is his hair. When did he get that giant bald? What happened to that hair? I was watching that match last night, and my first thought beyond, hey, Shapovalov, he's angry right now. My first thought, what happened to that hair?
It, you know, it's funny because Rafa was dealing with a foot injury last year, and maybe as the casual tennis fan, you haven't watched as much Rafa over the last year or two as you have in the past. So, he's had some time to get a little bit older. And when you get older, sometimes you lose your hair a bit. But listen, I'm okay with it. You know why? Because if you're going to be one of the most ridiculously incredible athletes and have hundreds of millions of dollars, you shouldn't have good hair. You know, like give that to like the civilians here. Give it to the Matt Claus and Mark Rose.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like when everyone's like ripping on Tiger Woods' hair, it's like, you know what? I'll be bald and take the money and take the fame. Okay.
Okay. So basically you're giving him a pass because he has everything else. It's sort of the opposite of Brady.
Well, he could maybe do something with the hair. I think he maybe should do the, I don't know, the guys on Overdrive always call it the Mark Messier, the shorten it up a bit, but whatever. What am I? He's not going to take advice from me. He's doing pretty good with his life. So
mess out there. All right. what was just your take on what we saw last night with Shapovalov? My thought is that there's no point yelling. And again, for people who don't know, in the match, there was times where it seemed like Nadal is getting a little too long, especially between the fourth and the fifth set, and just getting these medical, you know, these timeouts. And Shapovalov's point was everything is favored towards Nadal, and he called the officials corrupt. And my thought is I understand in the heat of the moment, it's hard to control the emotions, but none of that was going to help Shapovalov in a match that he ultimately lost in five sets.
Yeah, it's kind of like trying to guard LeBron James and not getting calls, you know, and you can complain all you want, but you're never going to get it, right? And Rafa has, in a way, it's frustrating. You can say it's unfair for a player like Shapovalov or anyone else that has to face, you know, the big three, but in a way they've kind of earned that leniency. Like he did get one time warning with his serve. I think it wasn't until the fourth set, I believe, and then he double faulted. I get it. And you know what? You're taking a player at his worst moment afterwards and asking them, you know, so how pissed off are you about all those things? Of course, they're going to go off a little bit. To go back to the beginning of the match, I think one of the big things that failed Shapovalov was that he wasted so much energy on it and he didn't block it out. And he has done a marvelous job in his career with being a little more stoic on the court. And it's not to say he needs to be completely stoic and not show his emotion, but this is the first time all tournament that he has complained about anything. And it's not as if he's had all these like blowout wins where there's nothing to complain about. So I think the moment got to him a little bit, and that's why, and Rafa was playing lights out, so I don't know if there's anything he could have done in those first two sets. Then I'll give him credit for turning things around and being the steady player and for being opportunistic and to force a fifth set, which no one really saw coming. But again, it's like as soon as something goes bad, you know, he's yelling at his coaches, he's yelling at himself, he's yelling at the chair umpire. What does that do? Not a whole lot. And especially against Rafa, who is so mentally strong and maybe wasn't as physically strong as he would like to, but that, you know, he willed his way to a victory. And hopefully for the Shapovalovs of the tour, when they lose these matches, they can look back and go, okay, that was a huge mistake. I can't do that. As much as it's so easy to complain about the situation, it doesn't do me any good. And I have to just focus on whatever the game plan was, which, you know, the game plan for Shapovalov, if you watched, changed. He was way back on his return and he made an adjustment and it started to work. And, you know, it's painful because you have all the momentum going into the fifth set, and you know, Dennis complained about the 7 minute bathroom break that disrupted it. You can't let that bother you. You can't. And you know, again, hopefully he learns from it and he can move on, because it was a phenomenal tournament for him.
Yeah, and that's the shame. It was a very good tournament, and then, you know, a hell of a comeback to force a fifth set. But that's not the headline. The headline was everything else that that went on around it. And again, I mean, like, do you view a match like that and see, okay, this can be a good building block for Shapovalov?
I do. Now it's up to him. You know,
yeah.
Like I said the same thing when he lost to Novak Djokovic at Wimbledon last year in the semifinals, where he really made Novak uncomfortable. He should have won the first set, loses in straight sets in a match that everyone thought it didn't feel like a straight set. It felt like more four sets, five sets. Dennis is all emotional afterwards. Novak gave him so much credit. And then Dennis, you know, went on a really bad run. Like he didn't play well the rest of the season until he made the final in Stockholm. But the U.S. Open, he didn't play that well. Didn't play well in the big tune-up events for that final major. So really, it's on him, you know, and I guess we'll see over the next couple of months, but for sure it can be. This is one of those matches where you look back and go, you know, I was a 22-year-old who showed his immaturity, and I was right there, and I had the shots, and I had the game plan, and I had everything to beat, you know, one of these legends, and to beat him the first time I'm facing him at a major. And I let it kind of go through my fingertips. So yeah, it'll be on, you know, how he really kind of matures as a player, because it's not one of those things where I got to work on my backhand, because clearly that failed me. And you know, there's so much growth in his game, both on the court and in his head. And that's maybe the positive to come out of this, is that he's not tapping out with his resources.
Yep. Now it's true. There is a lot of positives, and now it just depends. Can he build on it? And yeah. All right. Moving on from that. Mark Rose joining us, covering all things tennis, Aussie Open with us, anchor at TSN. You see him on SportsCenter as well. The most important question I can ask you: what time is Felix Auger-Aliassime versus Daniel Medvedev?
It's in prime time, Matty. It's when all the networks fight over each other to get this time slot. This was the original TGIF or whatever they call it. It is 3:30 a.m. Eastern. So it's, yeah, it's 12:30 on the West Coast. So like,
yeah.
This is the first time that a Canadian has been in the quote unquote night session in Melbourne, which is early morning our time. So I guess I can't complain that.
No.
You know, we've had a lot of our Canadians play at, say, 10 o'clock like last night, or 11 p.m.
Yes.
But, it's showtime. Felix Auger-Aliassime versus Daniil Medvedev. Set your PVRs or set your alarm clocks and come join me. It's going to be fun.
You're a real MVP.
By the way, I think I said Danielle, but I between Felix Auger-Aliassime and Daniil Medvedev, I did damn well. Like,
you
of those
great
five words, I think I got four pretty much correct, so I'm feeling good about myself. All right, as this is a betting show, or it has elements of it, I just throw it to you. You can only bet one, and maybe you can do it the easiest bet or the one where there's value. Nadal plus 70 to win, 270 to win it all. Medvedev minus 110 to win it all. Or Felix Auger-Aliassime to win at 3:30 tomorrow morning at plus 5:30. So if you bet 100, you win $530. Of those three, which one is Mark Rowe taking?
You know, the reason why this show wins so many awards is not That's because true. It's boring. It's not because it's safe. Let's go with Felix. Let's go with the Canadian.
Love
Let's
it.
Retire on this bet.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
You
exactly.
Like that?
I do, Kirk Cousins. I do. And I love that when you're in the NFC East throwing those picks. But anyways.
By the way, real quick as we end this, how much did it hurt you as a Cowboy fan that when Patrick Mahomes got the team into a field goal with 13 seconds, immediately on Twitter, everyone said Dak had 14 and couldn't get it done?
Matty, I've been all Australian Open tennis. I have not focused at all on the NFL. I have no idea what happened over the last couple of weeks. Are the Bills still alive? Is Carlo okay?
Poor Carlo. Poor Carlo. He's still
yeah.
he's
no, yeah, that
Al's
was a real
brother.
Football team. That yeah, was a real football team that had a coach, had a game plan, had timeouts.
Yeah.
The quarterback told his receiver what to do, and the receiver did it. It was yeah.
It's a tough one.
Anyways, so yeah, Felix today at 3:30 a.m. Eastern.
There it is. There it is.
I'll be there, and so will you, man.
Well, the thing is these tennis matches go 4 hours, so I'll be
there.
Yeah,
you'll be waking up to it.
I'll be there for the end of it. I might not be there for your intro. So as we end this, Mark,
what do you say? Don't work too hard on my intro.
I you know what? It doesn't have to be your best one. You know, okay. It doesn't have to be Walt Whitman. You know, okay. You can just get by with, you know, Walt.
Okay.
Are you taking a nap? Are you now up for the day? What is going on with you with your sleep?
What I'm up. I'm up for the day. My sleep pattern has been typically 6 a.m. to noon. I've been getting home around 6 a.m. I think that streak's going to be broken today or tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm up. I do some notes. I throw on something in the background on TV. I take the dog for a walk just to get the blood flowing because that's the only exercise I'm getting at this moment. I'm living off of Niner Diner Catering and lots of tennis.
Lucky. You're a lucky man with your diet. Well, good luck. All the best. And I'm sorry that your sleep patterns is basically like Kramer or Jerry when the Kenny Rogers roasters. Yeah, when the Kenny Rogers. That's basically your sleep right now. All the best, my friend. Hey, listen, it's an exciting match. Canadians get into the quarters. And if we see an upset at +530, you're cashing in some good money there. Thanks so much, Mark.
I might not show up to work tomorrow if it happens.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, screw you guys. It's my gold-plated Mercedes-Benz.
Yes, that is my style. Thanks,
Matty. Take care, my friend. Yeah, thank you. That is Mark Rowe, TSN anchor, Aussie Open, 3:30 this morning. Felix Auger-Aliassime. All right, on the other side, we'll hear from Sheldon Keefe on the latest on Jake Muzzin, Jeff O'Neill's thoughts on the Leafs' response, and Stephen A. Smith on why Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame. It's all coming up right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm host Matthew Cause. Our Tuesday Top 5 in honor of the Buffalo Bills losing in yet another horrific fashion to the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs. Top 5 worst playoff losses for you, the ones that stick out the most. And people, you can text us at 105050, tweet me at mcause56. For our list between me and my producer, we are only allowed to pick one Leafs one. Okay, we're not. Yeah, you could do a whole range of them. You know, only allowed one. Someone write in, Leafs blow a 4-1 lead. You're going to have to be more specific. Bears lose on a double doink. That's right, losing a Philly. Someone else, the 1994 World Cup. That's where Brazil beat Italy 3-2. I think that was in a penalty shoot. Oh, yeah, penalty shoot. I think it was the Rose Bowl. Someone else writing in, Dan from Georgetown. Norwood, 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 and Norwood. Funny, when you're a Giants fan, we have a different feeling about that. And then someone else is past Saturday, San Fran versus Green Bay. And then talking about other Green Bay losses, the 2015 NFC Championship game. I was at that game in the stands with my 7-month pregnant wife trying to make arrangements to go to the Super Bowl only to watch Green Bay lose it because Brian Bostic couldn't take a knee. Oh, yeah, and had to run the ball only to fumble it. Seattle recovered and scored. Oh, my God, that is true. Oh, wait a minute. That's a sports
Matt,
center.
Are you ready for this one? All right,
okay,
you ready?
Wait. When that music plays, it means we have an update, and my producer, Austin, sounds very excited. What's going on, buddy?
Sources, Ian Rappaport, Sean Payton has informed the Saints that he is stepping away.
Wow.
From multiple sources, Sean Payton is retiring. Oh. So the New Orleans Saints, add them to the coaching list as it looks like Sean Payton... I thought he just gave that quote too about you don't want to hang around too. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, he gave that quote about, you know, if you hang around too long, eventually become the villain. Sort of the Batman quote. But then Sean Payton went on to say he wants to stick around.
Yeah, he wants to be the villain. Wow, I'm shocked by that.
That is crazy. So a couple weeks ago, he's like, no, I'm here for the long haul. I blame Taysom Hill. I'm just going to come straight. I blame Taysom Hill. I blame Jameis Winston. I blame Ian Book. I think there's a fourth guy that played quarterback for the Saints, who I forget.
Simeon.
What's that?
For Simeon.
Oh, yeah, Simeon. Well, I keep calling him Trevor Simeon. I don't like talking to him because I know inevitably I'll say Marcus Simeon and then I sound like a dummy. Okay, a couple of quick thoughts here. One, there was talk that the Saints could be a good destination for a Russell Wilson, maybe Aaron Rodgers, but that's done. Like this, there's only a couple coaches that have that sort of power where a coach can be a big reason why you want to go to that team. Well, that's now done. Without him there, a team that I don't think is in a great cap situation. They have no quarterback. Is Michael Thomas even coming? Like, they've got what they have. They've got very good offensive and defensive lines. They've got Alvin Kamara. They got Marcus Lattimore. But what else do they have with the Saints?
Yeah, that's a lot of cap trouble, as you just said, too. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just sorry. I'm still taken aback by that, I guess. But what did they – yeah, I guess you're right. I guess that last season, not having Drew Brees, there's just not a lot to be – I'm shocked by that because Sean Payton's not an old man either. Sean Payton's not even in his 60s yet. I am – do you think taking a year off and then he could be going somewhere else? Do you think this is it? Last we've seen Sean Payton in the NFL? Is this a Saints-specific thing? I have so many questions. I'm sorry.
And then I don't want to do the speculating thing.
That's fair.
But – at the very least, you have to wonder about, is there anything with his health?
Yeah.
Is there anything with family? Like, you know, the first thought, you know, often these cases is you immediately go to the football side of things. And then, honestly, I'm wondering how much is this going to impact what the over-under total is for the Saints? Like, then you go sometimes on a betting perspective. But just on a human perspective, for him to have such a turnaround in terms of, you know, just his stance on his career, I can't help but think or wonder what's going on. Is everything good with his family? Is everything good with him to suddenly have a 180-degree turn?
Yeah, and when he got suspended the year, we all saw the movie of him coaching his son. So it seems like it's a tight-knit family. So you hope that's not the issue for sure. Is the Saints the most attractive job now in the NFL too, immediately? But all the things we just listed, I don't think it is because of the cap turmoil, because of the lack of solid position at the quarterback, you know.
I think it's cap and quarterback. That's the problem. Like there's
Alvin
a lot
Kamara
of good
still,
to like
and you have Alvin Kamara for 8 games, and that 8 games he'll be great. But outside of that, I'm not sure.
And what's going on with Michael Thomas? Like just that was that situation was an ugly one. If you are, then my next thought here is, if you're the Falcons, are you feeling? Oh, okay, maybe this is an opening if we can. You know, I mean, there's things they need to improve on, but the NFC South, if Brady, and it does sound by all accounts, just listen to Brady, it sounds like he's going to retire. Like if Brady and Sean Payton are both out of the NFC South, what the hell is the NFC South? Like it's a very talented Tampa team and a talented Saints team, both without quarterbacks. Carolina has basically nothing.
There's Matt Ryan sitting there just ready to win the division again.
The Falcons got blown out so much.
Sean Payton is, I know you don't want to speculate, but I'm not going to listen to you. Sean Payton is someone who's constantly been linked with the Cowboys job as well. So, you know, there's all that stuff going on. This is fascinating. This is a fascinating one. I also think if management could have went to him and been like, we're going to be rebuilding this year because of the cap turmoil. We can't keep this going. And he didn't want to do that. I think you could have seen that too.
Yep, 100%.
Talk about it more with Andrew Cayley next, though.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we'll ask him about it from covers.com. And now where do you want to go? I mean, now it's like we're definitely having fun with everyone and we're texting in their playoff losses that hurt more than any other. And I like this one. Someone wrote in Saskatchewan. Too many men on the field against Montreal in the Grey Cup.
Oh, that's an all-timer. That's definitely an all-timer.
That is an all-timer because you had it won. And it's not like that extra guy made an impact on that missed field goal. You know, that is definitely, that is a big one, big one, big one. By the way, shout out to Mike Riley. Now, we'll do CFL for a second. Mike Riley, the BC Lions, and before that, Edmonton Elks quarterback. He's retired after 11 years in the league. TSN football reporter Farhan Lalji on the Mike Riley retirement.
Rod, not at all. I think this was coming since the end of last season. There was a lot of talk around it and just his motivation level for wanting to continue, because Michael Riley has been through a lot, including his mother's passing recently, and that certainly impacted him. But also his body has really taken a bit of a physical beating the last few seasons. And you always have that situation at the end of every year that, do I want to go through this again? Do I want to rehab? Do I want to prepare? And then on top of that, when they lost the season, other things fill in the gap. And he just loves spending time with his family, with his two young daughters. They're both entering school age right now. He doesn't want to spend more time away from them. And on top of that, he's got his post-football career all set. He got involved in firefighting during the lost season, taking some coursework around that. He's been doing that again since the end of this past season. There's some opportunities there for them. He's ready to move on to life beyond football.
And I hope he's doing well just in terms of his health, because it's not good when you get voted in more than one season as the toughest player in the league. It's a badge of honor. It's great. Probably also means you took a lot of hits and maybe hits where you shouldn't be taking hits. But an incredible career, won a Grey Cup, an incredible productive quarterback. The retirement of Mike Riley, that is tough. And if we're going to speculate, it seems to me that if Jeremiah Masoli, I don't know where he is right now in terms of the vaccine, but Masoli needs a team. The team needs a quarterback. Feels like there could be a love connection.
Oh,
there.
I like the way your mind works there. Yeah, it sucked to see Mike Riley leave.
You
could just see it, though, this year. He just didn't have the same zip on the ball. It just, so much of a pounding you can take as a human being physically before it catches up with you.
Yeah, and it just never worked with the Lions. It just bad offensive lines, and it seemed like there was all these great receivers that this was going to work out. It just never did. Andrew Cayley, senior betting analyst with covers.com. We'll talk about biggest betting takeaway from the last weekend, early thoughts on the AFC-NFC championship game lines, and the Raptors favored by 3.5 at home tonight against Charlotte. I got some thoughts, some player prop bets. We'll see if he likes them or if he makes fun of me. We will find out in just a moment. You're listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050.